Welcome to another edition of the Media Schwitz. I'm Mark Glazer, executive editor of PBS Media Shift, along with Rafat Ali. This show is mainly about cord cutting and over-the-top TV services and where we stand in that. How are you doing, Rafat?
Good, good. I think we're probably sounding slightly different this week to people who listen to us regularly, only because we're having some technical issues through Skype.
Yeah, this is our We Hate Skype episode as well. I don't know if it's Skype's fault or, you know, the disconnection or our computers, but this show we're doing over phone instead of Skype, so we'll sound a little bit different, but hopefully just as good as usual.
Imagine that, landline phones, wow.
We're going old school with phones. So I guess let's talk a little bit about just the whole cord-cutting phenomenon, which we've talked a little bit about before. You know, I just recently stopped, you know, when I moved to a new place, I decided not to have cable anymore and, you know, have been basically subsisting on the Roku box connected to my TV and using Netflix streaming and Netflix DVDs and also Hulu Plus for a lot of TV shows. What have you been doing as far as TV consumption, if you're watching TV?
I don't. I cut the cord when I moved from Los Angeles to New York. It's going to be 2 years soon. So I have a TV. It's a relatively large flat screen TV. I just stream through my Roku box and Apple TV. Apple TV more for... So how I've categorized it is Apple TV, which has a much better interface.
Right.
For this, because it has Netflix and Roku also has Netflix, and so Apple TV primarily, I don't download anything from iTunes, is primarily a Netflix box.
Yeah.
And Roku is everything else box, which means they do have some streaming channels, Al Jazeera, BBC News, and CNN International. I stream through Roku and also Amazon.
Do you pay for those channels? How does that work when you get
those
channels?
No, these are free channels. They're not necessarily legal, but there is a way to stream it. There are apps out there that help you stream it. Al Jazeera is legal because they have a deal with Roku to stream it.
Okay,
BBC
so you
News.
Go into the channels of Roku and look for Al Jazeera?
They have Al Jazeera is within the Roku official. There's a news app that Roku has that has a bunch of channels, and which is mainly on-demand news from all these places that you would expect, CNN. And these are clips that most of these channels already have on their websites.
Right.
And but in Al Jazeera's case, it's a streaming channel, which they also stream online, because most of the news channels don't stream online, at least the U.S. ones don't stream online. Al Jazeera does, so they're also giving it away on Roku.
Does it look pretty decent as far as the quality of what you're seeing?
It's okay. I mean, it's news. I don't know if it's encoded in a higher bit rate. I don't think it is than their website. So I think they're just pushing that stream through whatever encoder they have to do to make it to Roku. And so
right.
It's not great, but it's news. So I'm not looking for HD. If it was entertainment, it'd be slightly different. What I also have on Roku, what you also have on Roku is Hulu Plus, and I'm paying for it, and Amazon Prime Instant, whatever they're calling it, their subscription service, which is sort of you pay $79 for their Prime shipping thing,
so
you get this
you
for
have
free.
That as well.
I have that. So it's on, it already comes on Roku. So, and then it also has Netflix. Roku in general is actually not a bad box. The problem is that its UI isn't the greatest compared to Apple. So at some point you would expect Apple to have those deals as well. So that's my habit.
How often are you using Amazon?
Not much, really. I must have watched some movie last week through Amazon Instant that I don't recall, but for me it's kind of interchangeable between... Hulu Plus doesn't have tons of movies. It has a lot of I watch The Daily Show and Colbert through the box on my TV.
Yeah.
And
are you watching also on your iPad as well?
Not really. I mean, I have Netflix on iPad. I haven't even downloaded Hulu Plus on iPad. Is there a Hulu Plus iPad version, right?
Yeah.
There is.
Yeah, I've been watching stuff on Hulu Plus and on Netflix on my iPad, and I have to say sometimes it's easier to just kind of pull up, you know, a show like Daily Show or something and just kind of quickly watch it on the iPad. You really have to have a good connection to make it work. But I mean, at home it's pretty easy to just kind of pull up an iPad and start watching something on it. It's you know, sometimes it seems easier than going through the TV setup for whatever reason.
Yeah, probably it's supposed to also touchscreen, so it's a better, quicker experience in terms of UI than say going through the Roku box UI.
And one of the cool things is that if you pause something or, you know, stop something in the middle that you're watching on the iPad, and then you turn on your TV and go to Hulu, it'll say, do you want to resume at this spot? Like, it'll know the spot you were on. Probably, I'm guessing, if you watch on the web, too. So for this show, we're going to talk, we'll talk about Fox just came out with this new 8-day window where the shows that normally run on Fox broadcast TV are not going to go online streaming for 8 days on a lot of the services, except if you can authenticate that you have pay TV if you're on Hulu Plus. And we'll bring on Brian Stelter as our guest, who writes about media for the New York Times and specifically writes a lot about TV and streaming online. So he'll come and talk to us about that. And we'll also talk about the different streaming services, Hulu, Netflix, and Amazon has now made some deals with CBS and Universal, and talk about, you know, whether they have a shot against Netflix and Hulu. And then finally, we'll talk a little bit about Apple has changed basically the way that apps can sell in-app subscriptions or book sales, and how some of the publishers are responding to that. So Brian Stelter is the media reporter at the New York Times. He writes about television and the web for the paper and the paper's blog, Media Decoder. Before joining the Times, Brian was founder of the TV Newser blog, which he later sold to Media Bistro. Welcome to Media Twits.
Thanks for having me.
So we're, you know, one of the things we're talking about is the Fox just had this announcement that they're going to have this 8-day window from the time that a TV show like Glee or The Simpsons or whatever, you know, people watch on Fox broadcast before it can go online to a lot of the streaming sites for free. And the only people who will get to watch it the day after the show are people on Dish Network and on Hulu Plus. People are paying that $8 a month premium for Hulu Plus.
Yeah.
They say they're going to authenticate onto other services, but at the moment that's the
Someday.
Only way to see the shows in that 8-day window, right?
That's right. This is putting the genie far back in the bottle, or at least trying. You know, the other analogy I've been using is it's like tightening the spigot. You know, this water has been flowing so freely. These shows have been available within hours of the time they premiered on television. Honestly, it was like the best way to watch television for a few years. And now Fox, and soon probably ABC, are going to restrict these this viewing online to people that are paying for either cable or satellite.
Which is a little odd because when you think about it, Fox, I mean, this is programming that you can get over the air. All you need to have is a digital converter, and you can get it to watch whenever you want.
That's right. That's sort of the uncomfortable thing about this from a public policy standpoint, and some public interest groups have come out to make that very point, that you can watch these shows for free over the air, so why would they only be online for people that are paying? But this is the business model we live in, that the networks, the broadcast networks, the over-the-air networks, are making money now from cable and satellite companies for the right to retransmit their programs. And as a result, those cable and satellite companies that are paying a lot of money to rebroadcast Fox shows they say it doesn't make any sense for those shows to be online for free the next day.
I just saw something on broadcast and cable saying that all the Fox affiliates were really happy. The local affiliates were happy.
They love that. They love it. And you know, generally speaking, you know, the big companies are protectionist. Their job is to keep the genie in the bottle, to try to control the way we view in the way that maximizes their profits. For a while, Hulu was an exception to that rule. And I think what we're seeing is Hulu really struggling in this current environment where the companies are trying to protect their existing business models.
Do you think that, Brian, that this the Hulu, which I guess is an open secret that they're in a sale process, or at least
yeah.
companies looking
yeah.
at it, do you think this will seriously harm their, well, firstly, sale prospects in the short term and long term? I mean, wouldn't you think people would want to would be subscribing more to Hulu Plus as a result, or do you think that's just?
I'm hearing a lot of talk about the possibility that this hurts the sale, rather hurts the sale price. That Hulu is less valuable because it has content in a smaller, narrower window. On the other hand, I think your point about Hulu Plus is very interesting. That Hulu Plus has about 1 million subscribers. They're paying $8 a month to watch more than is available for free. So, for example, I can watch entire seasons of shows that are not available for free. Potentially, more people will sign up for Hulu Plus, because if you sign up for Hulu Plus, you can still watch The Simpsons the day after it airs. You can still watch House the day after it airs, or Bones, or any of these shows. But I've noticed that this week, Fox is trying to downplay that. They're not promoting the fact that you can watch the shows the next day on Hulu Plus. In fact, they're sort of pretending it's not there at all. And that's an indication that these companies, especially Fox, do not support the Hulu business model. What they want to do is protect their cable and satellite business model and really downplay the Hulu model. And I think that is a bad sign probably for Hulu going forward.
I mean, I suppose the fact that they're trying to spell it is a sign enough, right?
That's right.
I mean, what about the average person who's out there that wants to watch TV, you know, wherever they want? They don't want to have to pay these very high rising kind of cable bills and satellite bills, and they just feel like, hey, I want to watch the shows I want. I don't want to have 500 channels. You know, I only need to have a few shows. I just want to watch them when I want, whether it's through Netflix or Hulu or whatever service, or if it's through the network directly. You know, I just want those specific shows. It feels like this is kind of, like you said, putting the genie back in the bottle. I mean, they can go to BitTorrent the day after it shows, and they can download it pretty easily. So wouldn't this lead to maybe more piracy if you're not going to give people what they want?
I think undoubtedly it'll lead to some piracy, and what we're going to have to watch the next 6 months to a year is how much piracy happens. Because one of the reasons Hulu was invented in the first place, it was to combat piracy. It did a pretty good job. I would say, arguably harder to steal a show than to watch legally on Hulu right now. But as that spigot tightens, as the genie's put back in, I do think we're going to see some increase in piracy, and the question will be how much of an increase there really is.
And you think that the other networks might follow Fox's lead and do the same thing?
I do. I think it's all but certain that ABC will definitely follow this path. Unless there's some drastic change there internally in their internal thinking, they will adopt the same practice of delaying shows unless you've paid for a cable or satellite subscription. It's unclear what NBC would do, because NBC has a stake in Hulu, but they've given up all their management control because they were bought by Comcast. NBC is sort of a silent partner now in Hulu, so it's unclear what they'll do. What this comes down to, I think, at the end of the day, is making it really, really easy to confirm that you're a subscriber, you know, because right now I can watch CNN on my computer, live stream of CNN, but only if I have Verizon Fios or Dish Network or certain cable companies. If you have other ones like Time Warner Cable, you can't watch, so I'm out of luck here in New York. But theoretically, it's really easy to watch CNN online live if you pay. The hitch comes when you have to go scrambling through your bills, have to find the account number you have with Verizon or with Dish Network, have to log in, create an account. It's too much work right now. It's not as easy as it should be. And I hear everybody in the industry agreeing on that point, that it's got to get easier to verify that you're a paying subscriber if we expect people to sign up and go through this process just to watch shows online.
One other thing that I've noticed, and I don't know how much, this seems to be a peculiar problem for us who don't have cable, that let's say if we do want to do TV everywhere, you would think Taiwan or cable, I'm paying $99 a month just for the high band, whatever they call it, ultra brand internet. But if I want to be authenticated for the TV shows, I'm not a subscriber to the cable, even though I'm getting internet from that. So it's kind of a weird situation where they want you to be a cable subscriber, not just an internet service subscriber. So that's
right. It's a way to keep you addicted, so to speak, to cable. And by the way, most people are. I don't see any indications of widespread cord cutting. It might happen slowly and gradually among young people especially, but for the most part, I think in the short term at least, people are going to stay attached to cable and satellite, but they do expect a lot more on demand than they're getting right now. They're frustrated by how hard it is to watch what they want when they want it. The same is true for Netflix, by the way. You know, what's the dominant complaint about Netflix right now? Yeah, okay, the price is going up for DVDs, but the other complaint is that the streaming library, what they have online on demand, isn't that great. There's not enough content there. And I think we're going to hear that more and more the next few months as people spend more time on that service and realize what I can get on DVDs, through DVDs, I can't get online right now.
So what do you think what Netflix is doing with that, raising their price, is that what that's going to go to is getting more content? Like, my guess is that they're
basically
they
say,
saying, hey,
yeah,
we're going to have to pay tons of money for content, and we're willing to do that.
That's what they say, and the overarching business strategy here is wean down DVD to make more money from online, to have more money to pay for content. And they've got to manage that very carefully, you know, to get that transition right, to make that transition work. They've said explicitly they're going to spend all the money they get in from this change on streaming content. But that assumes that the Hollywood studios are willing to pay, you know, willing to give it to them, willing to take the money and give them the content. Netflix, after all, could further erode cable and satellite business models. So it remains to be seen how much content Netflix really can acquire in the short to medium term.
What about I guess the question is that now that people are, I think you wrote some stories too on it, about Hulu versus Netflix versus Amazon and Prime Instant, whatever they call it, and I guess Apple at some point if they end up buying one of these things. What do you make of the three plus Apple in terms of
We had the news this week that Amazon is acquiring more content. They've acquired some shows,
CBS,
I believe, from CBS,
NBC, I think,
and some movies from NBC from Universal. That's right. But right now they're not a player. Right now it's Netflix and then everybody else when it comes to who am I going to give my $8 or $10 to every month. Amazon certainly wants to be a player, and I think that might become a story the next few months as they acquire content, as they get their name out there. But right now it's Netflix and everybody else, and I think that's why this price change by Netflix, this increase in the price for DVDs, is so interesting, because people have to make a choice between DVDs and streaming. And when they choose between the two, they realize streaming might not have as much content as they really want. In other words, it's exposing the gulf between where we are and where we want to be. It's exposing the gulf between how much we want to have on demand and how little we have right now.
Do you think Amazon has a shot? I mean, they've got this Amazon Prime at $79 for a year, and they've added now, 50%? They've got 50% more content because they've made these deals with CBS and Universal. Do you think they're seeing this price hike by Netflix as an opportunity to, you know, get more people?
I think they are, and I think Blockbuster is. You know, Blockbuster has an on-demand service. Not many people use it, but they have one as well that they're trying to get established. I saw Walmart's Vudu service is gaining a little higher profile. All of these services lack the kind of content that Netflix has, but they are all looking at this space and realizing that they want to compete. It is going to be a much more complex environment going forward, I think, when we talk about these digital subscriptions for entertainment. And probably the winners, I don't know if this is true across the board, but perhaps one of the winners of this are the content providers, because now they do have more leverage. They do have a new place to sell to. And as a result, we may see this new window of content exposed, where Netflix gets shows a certain period of time sooner or later than a site like Hulu does for free.
What do you think of, Brian, YouTube? Do you think Google or YouTube Google and YouTube will have a role to play in any of this ecosystem that's emerging?
I think Google does, because Google has a role in every ecosystem online, it seems like. And I think we have to watch carefully what they do with YouTube over the next 6 to 12 months. They clearly have their eyes set on the living room. They clearly want to be a bigger player in that experience, and they have the money to spend to make it happen.
Do you guys think that this is kind of like a time, like a transitional time, and that there will be, in a few years' time, everything will be worked out and we will get to see the shows, you know, when we want, online, on whatever device we want, at whatever price point makes sense, but that this is just some weird kind of transitional time and that eventually we will get to that point?
Well, tell me what you think, Rafat. I'm pretty bullish on that vision that you're describing, because I do think that there's so much money on the line that they have to make it work. In other words, consumers spend so much for this content, and their expectations are so high now. We take for granted so much now that they'll have to find a way to make it work, but it is awfully ugly in this transition period. Even HBO Go, which I hold up as an example of how things will work someday, because you log in, they've got every episode of every show they've ever produced. There's a couple exceptions, but they're so old and forgotten about, you won't even remember the names of the shows. You know, they've got so much content on there, it's phenomenal, actually.
Need to pay for that?
Like having access to the Library
of
Congress.
You have to have a subscription to HBO.
HBO Go, you have to have a subscription, you have to log in, you have to remember your password, and even then, once in a while, I find the site crashes when I'm using it in certain browsers. So even HBO Go, which is the closest thing to the future we're describing, isn't quite there yet.
Yeah, I think I think the transition, by transition we mean chaos. I think chaos in general will remain for a while. I mean, didn't we say that 10 years ago that the news industry is in transition, and it's sort of, it's look where it is still.
Spotify. I mean, Spotify or this idea that you can have all the music, you know, you want for free on different devices. I mean, why can't that happen to TV and movies at some point?
I suppose. I mean, you could look at the music industry and all the churn it went through, and finally, I mean, just in terms of a consumer experience, if not necessarily in terms of business model, in terms of consumer experience, it's getting there. You can listen to it on your computer, on your home system, on your iPhone, or any kind of smartphone, and it's, I think, getting there. I think video, because of more technical issues, will probably take a while to get there, but also I think beyond technical, it's all the business model stuff that we're talking about. But I think probably the dream vision that you and I, all three of us have, I think it's probably going to take between 3 and 5 years. I mean, I'm hoping 3 or maybe less, but we don't know.
This might make me sound like an old fogey, but I found that when I was doing reporting on Hulu in the last couple of weeks, I had a number of executives remind me that we have come pretty far, that the industry has come pretty far, even as they figure out how to put some of this stuff back behind a paywall, even as they figure out how to tighten the spigot. It is sort of amazing that they've given up as much as they have, and that they've shared as much as they have. So I guess at the risk of sounding like a network tool, I would point that out.
Thanks a lot, Brian. Appreciate you joining us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So let's talk about Apple and their changes to kind of in-app subscriptions. Now, the Kindle app that's on, you know, the iPad and iPhone and Barnes & Noble apps and Kobo and some other ones have basically decided to strip out any ways to subscribe or buy things. So if you have a Kindle app on your iPad, now you can't your books that you've already purchased, I believe, are still going to be in the Kindle app. But if you want to buy books, you have to do it through the web. You can't do it on the apps. And it's basically because Apple's going to keep 30% of all those sales. And I guess this is a way to get around Apple doing that, right?
Yeah. The interesting part is on Kindle, this, I don't know if it was true for other apps, but since I'm a heavy user of Kindle and Kindle app, the button that they had, go to the store, actually was not an in-app store. It led you to the website. And
so it actually brought up Safari.
Brought up Safari, so it was just a link. And now, apparently, they don't even have the link. You just have to know. And you just have to know that you need to go to whatever m.amazon.com or amazon.com, and it'll take you to the store. Even the Amazon, there's a besides the Kindle app, there's the Amazon app for iPhone, which is where you search for stuff. You can search for stuff. You can bookmark it. You can email it to yourself, but you can't buy anything in the app anyway.
Right.
So even the Amazon app outside of just the Kindle app, you can do that. I haven't used the other apps, so I don't know that much about the other apps, but you probably have more knowledge in that.
Well, it just – I guess what seems like it's happening in a broader sense is that these different companies that have been selling things through the apps, or even magazines that have had subscriptions through their apps, now are basically wondering about, well, how much am I going to put into app development if I'm not going to get anything out of it? If I'm not going to get, I mean, for booksellers, you know, the big point is selling things. You know, book reading in an app is great, but for them, the business behind it is getting people to buy more books. And so I'm wondering whether this might be some kind of changing of the tide where people are going to stop doing as much app development and do more web apps and do more HTML5 and create kind of apps that live outside of the Apple ecosystem.
It'd be interesting to see specifically on book publishers. Amazon is coming out with their Android-based Kindle tablet. And
yeah.
I am among others waiting for it because I'm all about the Kindle ecosystem, and of course they will allow in-app buying and stuff.
And that's not going to be an issue with Android.
Of course, no, because this is you can modify it any way you want, and if Android is just the software, and so Amazon will control the whole ecosystem from their perspective. So. And I think it will be they will allow in-app as other Android phones and Android tablets allow that. So I think it will be I think the key for them is to figure out what the price point is, and if they design it good enough, I think it will probably make some sort of a dent in Apple iPad sales.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of The Media Twits. I'm Mark Glazer, executive editor of PBS Media Shift. Along with Rafat Ali, I want to thank our special guest, Brian Stelter from The New York Times, and also PBS and the Knight Foundation for making this podcast possible. Don't forget to follow all the news, polls, and events over at PBS Media Shift at pbs.org/mediashift. And our sister site, Idealab, at pbs.org/Idealab. We'll be off for the next couple of weeks, but we'll catch you after that.